Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Thanksgiving week kicks off the marathon of holiday gatherings, and that means you're going to be spending time with Uncle Reginald and Aunt Ratha, or whatever your version of them is. Point being, you're going to have to make nice with people who disagree with you or suffer the consequences. Are you up for it? Here's how to make holiday table discussions as painless as possible from KCBS Radio.
Politics and social media as incendiary as ever. Well, you may be bracing yourself for disagreements and divisions. Well, but for John A. Powell, more on this and his new book, The Power of Bridging, Powell joins us. I have a question here. Empathy and listening seems to be the first things that people should learn.
I think that's very important. And to listen, you know, it's sort of like not just with your mind, but your heart. Sometimes we listen to criticize or to find out what's problematic with someone's saying. That's not the kind of listening we're talking about.
Now, what kind of bridging and how does it relate to having conversations that might veer into a disagreement?
Well, one thing that's important, bridging doesn't mean you agree. It doesn't mean you even like each other. But it does mean you're willing to, as I said, listen empathetically. You're curious about the other person. You're courting them that they're a human being. They have their own story, their own feelings. And in fact, oftentimes when we help people bridge, we have them start with personal stuff. Not their position on an issue, not who they voted for, but what's important to them. Do they have children? Do they care about the children? Have they lost someone recently? So our feelings actually is a very fertile ground to bridge. And when we see each other's humanity, sometimes we do find common ground on other things. If we don't see each other's humanity, it's almost impossible.
It seems like it gets lost in translation a lot that we forget that we all pretty much have to put pants on every morning. We all have common ground that we can get connected on. How do we engage people with more good faith, especially with what's happening with the current election we've just had? We're going to have this new administration back in again. You know, where do we find more common ground to where we show that we are all in it together?
Well, one thing, we encourage people to begin what we call short bridges. Which is bridges with people who you actually maybe share a language. So don't start with the most difficult situation. Start with something that's manageable.
And it seems like if you just say hi to a random stranger on the street or just trying to find a way to burst your own bubble so you can get out of that little community you're in and just grow who you are, it seems like that's probably the easiest way to go about that.
That's extremely important. And one of the things is just being curious about someone. See them in a very flat way. We see the other person, the person that we are in contention with, that we're telling stories about. It's not very complicated. We see ourselves as very complicated. So be curious about them. Ask them about themselves.
Yes, it is very difficult. It seems that we forget that, you know, we're all humans and that everyone has, like you said, has a story, and just trying to remember about that human element when you walk outside and who you're going to run into. You never know what they're already going through and how you can relate to that and just make things better.
That's exactly right. And there's one story, a true story, where actually Isabel Wilkerson, who wrote the cast, she has someone in a house and they're a very different political persuasion than her. They can't connect. And at some point she says to that person, "How is your mother?" And the guy, he starts tearing up. "My mom died 2 years ago." And she says, "So did mine." And that's where they bridge. And all of us face death in our life, our own death, our parents, our friends. So all of us have something we can actually connect with if we are willing to take the time.
When it comes to common ground, there are two things we can all agree on. We want our streets in the neighborhood to be safe, and we want world peace. Or at least, we want not to lose our men and women in overseas wars. So let's move on to a discussion of crime on the Annie Fry Show. And then the show answers the question, what changes an opinion easier, love or information?
I'm going to give you some Chicago crime numbers from Bill. What's that?
Chicago.
Chicago from Bill Hemmer.
100. Robberies, 5,200. Felonies, theft, 16,400. Whether it's the mayor or the police chief, I'd just be pissed off if I saw those numbers. I mean, enough is enough, Kata.
Well, we've been pissed off, and we became pissed off when Brandon Johnson actually took office and, you know, moved to remove police officers from our Chicago public schools. And, you know, we're seeing this violence. We're seeing it being perpetrated with our youth. So we know that there's an issue with youth, and we know that it is starting in the schools.
But Pritzker has been at the center of this whole thing, and so has Chicago. So, of course, that clip fits. It says Trump's DOJ has found evidence the Dems are skewing crime stats. Now, this was just ahead of the midterm elections, but this is from Charlie Gasparino from the end of October. It says officials in President Trump's Justice Department have been scrutinizing crime data in recent months. They've found evidence that Democrat politicians, mm-hmm. not Republicans.
Yeah.
And I'd call out both sides. The whole beginning of the show is us calling out both sides.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just saying this is just Democrats doing it. They've been skewing crime stats for their own benefit ahead of the midterm elections. Of course, this was about a month ago. Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker is a vocal opponent of Trump's use of federal troops for both immigration enforcement and fighting big blue city crime, and has lately touted double-digit declines in Chicago crime rates, where, quote, shootings and homicides on our highways are down 60, 70, 80%, depending on where you look. That's the quote from him. But the number of felonies in Chicago, not to mention New York, Los Angeles, Portland, is declining only because woke prosecutors are knocking down felonies to something less severe for political reasons, DOJ sources say. Is anybody really surprised by this? This is the kind of story that makes you go, duh.
I'm frustrated by it, though. Because, like, whenever you look at this, the reason that they're doing it is to make it look like their policies aren't failing in this area.
Yeah.
And when your policies are failing in crime areas, that means that you're willing to hurt your populace, because that's what happens with crime. Innocent people are harmed. That's why crime is crime. You harm innocent people to maintain your ideological ideas.
Yeah.
And that's disgusting to me.
You're harming people for your personal benefit.
Your personal benefit.
For your career.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
It's ridiculous. Rather than, like, fixing it, they'd rather keep their ideas, though.
Yeah, that's right. We're not going to actually fix crime, but I know how to fix the way crime looks. We're in charge of those numbers. Famous among these kinds of people is Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan district attorney, who has continued to allow violent offenders to plead to misdemeanors instead of felonies, even after committing robberies or violent assaults. This is one of the areas that I'm a little surprised that Trump hasn't gotten more credit, because he really does want to solve crime. Now, he does it in a pretty heavy-handed way, but that's because the situation demands it. We're just mm-hmm. not in a place where you can go, oh, well, these people are going to lie to you. Obviously, they're doing it, and they're going to continue to let you be hurt unless somebody does something about it.
Well, the thing about it is you have to do the heavy-handed thing, because we've tried the soft-on-crime thing for the last 4 years, and what we're seeing is the numbers are bad. Crime is going in the wrong direction. You're getting more of it, not less of it. So you have to try the heavy-handed thing. This is the changing course thing that I was just talking about, doing something different to actually fix it.
The story is from Fox News. It says when the DOJ's stats are released, possibly in the coming weeks, so they may actually be out by now, but I haven't seen them, they should be a wake-up call for the Democrat Party. That's because these big city economies will continue to sour as more tax-paying residents leave for places that provide safety. Of course, the Dem leadership must also find the necessary guts to push back against the woke policies and policing edicts of far leftists like AOC and Zohran Mamdani, who at the time wasn't even elected yet, but they are ascendant in their party. DOJ sources believe Pritzker's recent talking points are part of a concerted effort by national Democrats to hide the various forms of blight created by their support for police defunding. One clip that's been making the rounds today that I didn't even grab because I forgot that that would play into this so well is that representative, she's running in Tennessee outside of Nashville. And you may have heard this because I think Mark played it. I was on Mark Cox's morning show when he played it. I heard Kilmeade play it as well. That she's a representative who has said, defund the police, defund the police, defund the police. And she even had one tweet that was like, good morning to everybody but those who want to fund the police, or something ridiculous. It was so obvious that she's against policing. She is for, I don't know, more crime. I'm not really sure what you're for when you're for defunding the police. More social workers? It's just not, it doesn't work. But she's out there and doing interviews, and one of them was on MSNBC. I don't know why she's gotten famous other than that her policies are that bad and she's so bold about her bad policies, and she's running for House of Representatives in Tennessee. But, and she's in a blue area, but she says stuff that you're like, really? Even Democrat usually aren't okay with that. Polling-wise, they're not okay with it.
Yeah.
Maybe some are, but not all of them. And she was given the opportunity for a layup on MSNBC. Here's some tweets you had said in the past about defunding the police. Do you still believe this? And she goes, I'm not here to talk about some old tweets I don't even remember. And then the interview, again, MSNBC, friendly territory, says, okay, but let's say, even if you don't remember the tweets, what about the topic itself? Do you support defunding the police? And she goes, I'm here to talk about my race, which is literally 9 days from now. I'm not even sure what we're doing here. You're using cable news talking points. MSNBC is having her on for a layup interview, and she's criticizing them for using talking points against her.
Yeah. MSNBC is like, all right, Ms. Now.
Yeah, MS Now.
They're like, we need to flip this seat. Please say something intelligent.
And she couldn't do it. So she basically said again in that interview, yes, I want to defund the police.
Gosh.
Without coming out and saying it, she didn't disavow her past remarks. She didn't even disavow the idea of defunding the police. She just avoided it. And it's so easy because so many of these politicians, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. And we all know that they do it. And it happens on both sides of the aisle. But with that issue specifically, you had a lot of Dems, especially in 2020, who said, yeah, defund the police or some form of that, if it wasn't directly that quote. And then since then, like Biden did, came back out and said, oh, I was never really for that. Even if you have some quote of me, that's not my point.
Yeah,
or I've switched and yeah, that was stupid. That was a boneheaded thing to say. They've come out and said, yeah, that was a bad idea. Even if they don't mean it. She couldn't even come out and say it and not mean it. That's how bad she was at doing this and how devoted she is to defunding the police.
Well, that's that whole ideological thing that I was talking about with these politicians that are fudging numbers to make it look like bad policies are good policies, that bad crime policy is actually working. They're more dedicated to the idea than they are the actual results. So it tells me that they're not really concerned about actually making the situation better. They're concerned about being right.
Exactly. This poll, which is more effective in changing someone's opinion, love or information? Which is more effective? Not necessarily which one do you use, but which I would think that you would probably lean toward that one if you think it's more effective. But what do you think? Love or information? Which is going to change someone's mind? We'd like to know what you think. Brad.
Well, you read a comment earlier about this, and the person said this, and I believe this. I've experienced it. I think that this holds true, that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So, like, if you're asking me how am I going to vote on this poll, it's love, but it's love with information. I mean, you can't just, like, the real answer is presenting information in a loving way. Ben Shapiro's thing is facts don't care about your feelings, and facts are facts regardless of how you feel about them. But people are emotional beings, and you have to appeal to their emotions, especially if you're trying to persuade, which is what you said this is about. This is about persuasion. You want to know why the left is able to get so many people riled up? It's because they play on their emotions. You know, they don't have to present the truth if they can make them feel like what they're doing is right. And whenever you stop and think about some of the things that are presented, things like universal health care, on the surface, if you don't dig down deep and think about it, it's like, oh, yeah, why shouldn't we be able to provide people with health care? That would be a really nice thing. That makes you feel good on the inside. And so that's why people pursue that and they buy into that. But they don't think about the information about, like, what will it actually mean later on down the road.
Do you think that Trump and Republicans are going to be able to work with Democrats to do something to change the healthcare system? Because they're trying to right now. But I just don't know if it'll happen. What do you think?
Trump and Republicans will be able to work with Democrats. Democrats will not be able to work with Trump.
Will there be enough Democrats that just voted to reopen the government, for say, those seven?
Those would kind of be the ones that you would really have to target. I think a Fetterman would be willing to look at it. I think that
there's probably three or four.
Yeah, the line
are
out there
seven?
From Democrats on this have been, we know that Obamacare is not great, but what are you offering that's better? So it is time to say, this is what we're offering, this is why it's better. So that way we don't have to eat the crap sandwich that is the ACA. That you're offering us with a smile.
The healthcare is out of control.
It's bad. Everybody agrees on that.
Everybody agrees, and Democrats just want to refund it and just keep pumping money into it right now anyway. Maybe that'll change.
So there's hope. Maybe only a fool's hope, but there's
hope. Because I don't even love the proposals that are coming out that much. They seem like better than what we currently have proposals. What I'm seeing about it is that it's not really a conservative proposal. It's a change that would help, but I just don't know what it's going to do to the budget. I don't know any of that stuff.
I think you need to be able to create competition within the market. And that's like the biggest flaw of the ACA. There's no competition. It guarantees healthcare. So they're not competing with one another.
So the question being, which is more effective in changing someone's opinion? This is the poll today. Love or information? My answer to this is also love. But I think this sums it up pretty well. I'm going to read a comment here from Jimmy. Says both love and information need to be used together. Ultimately, yes, that's true. People need to know how much you care before they will open themselves up to your ideas. Happy Thanksgiving.
Are you wondering what a Fox News host's holiday table will sound like? Here's Mark Cox with Jimmy Fallon.
So I have the official duty to determine, and I have determined that last year's turkey pardons are totally invalid. As are the pardons of about every other person that was pardoned other than, where's Hunter? No, Hunter's was good. That was the one pardon, Pam, that was good, right?
Yeah, you know what? I think President Trump needs a new joke writer. Maybe we can get Jimmy Fallon on the job from Fox Across America. You don't have enough to do these days, do you, Jimmy?
You know, it is funny, though, because Trump, at his core, is a comic. Like, that's what he wants to be. You know, because there's so many moments when he's supposed to be giving, like, a solemn speech, and he'll be like, and J.B. Pritzker, that guy's a fat slob.
Whoops, no, let it slip.
Whoops.
Shouldn't say this.
You're not supposed to be doing that right now, Mr. President, you know, but it just comes out of him.
It's all about timing, right? I mean, some of those lines are funny, but maybe it's because the dry way he delivers them, but they could be delivered better, like that auto pin line, I think.
Well, I love that you're trying to get me into a round of Yo Mama with the president. That's why you call into the Mark Cox show. You never know when you're going to be baited into a standoff with the president on a comedy stand, a roast battle.
Oh, I'm just trying to get you a little extra work there, Fela, on the side, you know?
Yo, you know what I'm doing for Thanksgiving? I'm working. I'm going I'm going to be in Vegas and San Luis Obispo out in California. So me, Jenny, and Lincoln, we usually host Thanksgiving, but tomorrow we'll be drunk on a plane watching football. It'll be wild.
So you have shows set up then out there when Black Friday, or is it actually on Thanksgiving Day?
Yeah. No, Friday night I'm in California, San Luis Obispo, and then I got two shows in Vegas over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. So I got to fly out tomorrow, because if I did a proper Thanksgiving in New York, like, I already dress like Fat Elvis, but I don't want to show up to Vegas looking like him. You know, that's a concern.
So who would be, if you could have your dream Thanksgiving table, who would be at it?
Oh, man. I mean, I love Elvis, so you need to know that about me. I'm a huge, huge, huge Elvis guy. Chuck Berry is right there with him, like a 1A. I like to say it's mostly musicians. So it'd be Elvis, Chuck Berry, absolutely positively Rodney Dangerfield, Johnny Carson, and probably Raquel Welch.
Wow.
Which, you know, if you got to throw a Google on it, it's a safe Google.
I don't know
who I could have named some of the modern women in my life, but they'd crash your work computer.
don't Google that, in other words. that is funny. So I got to tell you, Eddie Van Halen's son, Wolfgang, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he is in a band called Mammoth, which of course was the first name of Van Halen before they switched it to Van Halen. So he's now adopted the name Mammoth for his band. He performed last night at the factory here in Chesterfield, where you're going to be in January. Fabulous venue. I think you're going to love this venue.
Ike, you can't imagine how hard I've rocked out the Van Halen. Like, we play a lot of Eddie's guitar beds on my show coming in and out of break. So if you're telling me I need to show up in the diver down red with the white stripes, like, I'll do it. I'm not scared, Mark. I mean, if I'm going to go toe-to-toe with the president on the undercard, at least I can do is play some Van Halen in the main event.
Oh, this kid, Jimmy, he's a virtuoso. I mean, he's named after Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, I guess, and he literally just, if you close your eyes, he doesn't play any Van Halen in his shows, but he did for that Taylor Hawkins benefit that they did. And if you closed your eyes, you would think you were listening to Eddie Van Halen. He's amazing, amazing talent.
I love that. You know who told me that? Kennedy, who was an MTV VJ for a long time.
Yeah.
She's like, Eddie Van Halen's kid is like the most brilliant thing in the world.
Oh, my God.
And it was funny because On the day she was telling me that, I was getting a call from Lincoln School complaining that he told a BJ's joke in the classroom. Like, all right, well, we're not all raising prodigies over here, okay? Let's get that out of the way.
Oh, my gosh. What do you do? I you know, it's kind of a hit or miss there, huh? You're right? Eddie's kid grew up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he showed video of him growing up, like, plucking on a guitar when he was, like, 2 years old. He's over there plucking on one of his dad's guitars, and then he's hitting this solo that he just shredding it.
Oh, I love that. You know, Glenn Frey's son, Deacon Frey, plays with the Eagles. I saw him, and he was legit, too. I mean, there's a lot of talent out there, some of which is coming to Chesterfield. We'll be at the factory. It's a different talent. There's not as much guitar playing at my show as you might be, you know, worked up for. But we make up for it with some extra dance moves, so everybody's going to be fun.
I love it. So when you're going on tour like this, will you tailor your show to the town you're going to? Like, I know nothing about San Luis Obispo, California. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you need to know regionally when you're going to go do a show out there?
You absolutely want to open by talking to them about where you are. So California is easy because you got Newsom, Katie Porter. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot happening in California right now. But absolutely, when I come to your hood too, that's what you do. Because every show, if you're smart, you're creating a moment in time that'll never exist again. You know, so you've got your act, but it's essentially a state of the union. Like, when I show up to a town, it's a state of the union. It's a combination of what went on in the world that week, how I feel, or what I've learned from where I happen to be performing that night. And then a collection of, I guess, what I consider the hits, which are my favorite jokes on the road at the time. Like last week, by accident, I was in Pittsburgh. No, I wasn't there by accident, but I'm saying, but by accident, I did an hour on Pittsburgh. I didn't mean to, but there was just so many angles based on things I had done that day and what the Steelers were up to. And me, I went to a Steelers game this year with my son, and I'm pretty sure we got a contact high from Aaron Rodgers. So it just flowed through the show.
Now I want to hear what you'll say from Missouri.
Oh, listen, you don't understand how far back I go. Like, we're going to talk about Willie McGee. Like, I want to talk about the Cardinals.
Nice.
I want to talk about Vince Coleman. You know, you'll get some good pulls out of me.
I love it. You know, Daryl Strawberry lives here now. Trump just, like, completely pardoned him the other day. He's a minister. He does ministry work here in the St. Louis area now.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Listen, I've met Strawberry in the city, okay? And I know he's a minister and he's rehabilitated. The last thing I want to know is that I'm going to be walking out of, like, Molly's in Sewell Yard and drunk on Bloody Mary's and run into a childhood hero. That actually puts pressure on me.
It could. You never know. I mean, you never know who you're going to run into up here. That's awesome. Hey, Jimmy, have a happy Thanksgiving on a plane, please.
Instead of snakes on a plane, we've got turkeys on a plane.
Fail up.
Daniel Jackson, you said hi.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, buddy, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.